Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Welcome to Your Family Dog podcast. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith and I'm here with Colleen Pilar. Hi, Colleen.
Hey, Julie.
Today we're going to talk about the reasons why Colleen and I have chosen to be positive reinforcement trainers. It's our philosophy of training, and we think it's important you understand why we do things the way we do them. Don't you agree, Colleen?
I do. There's a lot to think about with training methods and the ideas that you want to be communicating yourself and what you're teaching your dog. And I think positive reinforcement training is the way to go.
So I think both of us started out being more traditional trainers. You want to talk a little bit about what that is and what caused you to change from being a traditional trainer to a positive reinforcement trainer?
Sure. I started teaching dog obedience classes in 1991, which everything I'd ever taken was traditional methods. I mean, your first day of class, they taught you how to fit a choke chain and then taught you how to do corrections on it. So when I began training, I helped everyone fit their choke chains and I taught them how to do corrections. I taught what I knew. That's what I understood. But I wanted to be a really good dog trainer. I was very, very motivated to learn as much as I could about the science and art of dog training. So I started really learning and researching and studying. And what I found was different methods. And the different methods were much more positive reinforcement based. And it seemed sort of a theoretical debate to me in the very beginning. But as a teacher, I was a little frustrated. Because in my classes that I had run with traditional training methods, the dogs were all amazing for me and not always so good for their owners. And you see this a lot in traditional methods where the dog will be really good for the trainer and then the trainer leaves and the behavior falls apart. And my perception, I would admit this doesn't reflect well upon me, but my perception at the time was the people are screwing it up. The owners are doing it wrong. Well, if you're a teacher and your students are doing it wrong, the problem lies with the teacher. But what I learned was I was having these very, very consistent interactions with their dogs for a limited period of time. Once a week, I would be interacting with their dog and setting up very clear criteria that I could 100% set up. There was consistent responses. You do it right, mm-hmm. and I'm happy. You Absolutely. Do it wrong, and I correct you. Well, people didn't have that level of consistency. I don't have that level of consistency with my own dogs. But yet, for my students, I could have that. So they would say, oh, he's so good for you, and he's so bad for me. And initially, I admit, I thought, yeah, he is so bad for you because your training isn't good. But the more I learned about positive training, the more I learned it's about shaping behavior and looking for what do you want and using positive, gentle methods, Absolutely. The more the dogs really listen to the people. You know, that's what we want. The goal is not for the dog to listen to me. The goal is for the dog to listen to their family. So the more I learned, that's how I started training. Is that kind of the experience you had too?
More or less, but mine was more from the student point of view. We had gotten this dog, Molly. My younger daughter had wanted a dog, and she was 8 years old and saved up $100, and we went to the pound, and we got Molly. And Molly had some real issues. She was about 1 year old when we got her, and she had some difficulty with other dogs. She had difficulty with people. If I knew then what I know now, Molly probably would not have come home with us. Probably grossly under-socialized and had some serious issues and was becoming more aggressive. So we sought out treatment and went to what was considered the best in our area and did training. She got kicked out of class. We did this. We did that. We ended up with a board and train, which ended with traditional methods. So when we got her back after 3.5 weeks at board and train, she was doing well. But the problem was is that she would see other dogs, and she might be able to be controlled at first, but it would start to burst out, and she started getting a little bit more aggressive towards children. We moved to Virginia, and when she bit a child, not my child, but another child in my home, I ended up calling All About Dogs and talking to you. And I remember saying to you, look, I have spent thousands of dollars on training here, and I've done this traditional method, and I'm not so sure I really want to switch. And you convinced me to try positive reinforcement training. So I said, okay. So we set it up for some private lessons, and we met with, at that time, the owner of All About Dogs. She handed me a clicker, handed Emma, my daughter, a clicker, and we started training. And within a week, things were so different between us and Molly. As I was describing it, it's like the lightness of being. There was this burden that was lifted from our shoulders and from seemingly from Molly's shoulders. Mm-hmm. She was much more responsive to us. Training was fun. My daughter, who was 8 years old or 9 years old at the time, could actually do the training. She was too little to do corrective training.
Which is huge. It's huge. Very important.
And it was her dog. And it developed the relationship that blossomed between her and Molly and the rest of our family was amazing. And we were able to then put her into group classes with other dogs. She did better with people. We were never able to completely cure her of her early aggression. Even with the positive reinforcement training and her life got better and our lives got better, we were never able to completely overcome her early puppyhood trauma. But nonetheless, it convinced me above and beyond anything else that I wanted to do positive reinforcement training and I wanted to work with dogs who had issues because I wanted other people to experience the joy of making a connection with their dog that was never made with force-based or punishment-based methods.
Right. That's a really good point. Both pieces, the connection piece, and also that the methods are safe for children to be involved and children to be doing.
Absolutely.
And children mimic their parents. So even if you never tell your child to correct a dog, if that's what they're seeing, that's what they're doing. That is not safe. In fact, I actually had a client who it was a little child. He was, I don't know, he was maybe 2.5. And he said something about, we have to spank the dog. And I was like, we have to what? And he said, we have to spank him a lot. And they were swatting this dog for getting on furniture regularly. And this little boy was telling me, and his mother was like, oh, no, we don't do it that often. And in questioning, yeah, they're doing it. And so was he. A 2.5-year-old was hitting the dog. That is so dangerous. So what we want is relationships that are built on, you know, trust and cooperation and communication. And that's what positive reinforcement does.
Absolutely. And the other thing it does is it focuses, the problem with punishment-based methods is it focuses on the problem. Mm-hmm. Positive reinforcement training focuses on the solution. And I love that because now, instead of being in an adversarial relationship with your dog, where I say, I need to prevent you from doing that, to stop you, which is stopping a behavior is not a behavior. It makes you focus on where are we headed towards this? What do I want you to do instead? No, nobody wants, you know, Rover to jump on grandma, right? But instead of saying no jumping, what are we going to do instead? Now we train towards, as I put it, four on the floor. All four paws are on the floor or sit by my side. So now I've got a goal that the two of us, the dog and I, are working towards together. And that puts us in a relationship that's really wonderful because we have this mutual goal. And it also relieves an awful lot of pressure off of both of us. It doesn't require that I be perfect at all times to control my dog, and it doesn't require that the dog have to suppress all of his behavior at all times. And to me, that's just really terrific because I like being focused on a solution. And then that's where people start getting creative. When I ask them, what do you want him to do instead? Suddenly doors are wide open for creative solutions.
Yes. And you know what? Dogs are doing good things so much.
Absolutely.
And the bad things are just little pieces. So when we start saying, okay, if we're reinforcing anything other than jumping on grandma, there's a whole lot of behavior we could be reinforcing. So simply four on the floor, the dog could be any number of activities are appropriate now. As long as all four of your paws are on the floor, I like it. And the dog goes, oh, okay, there's lots of things I can do. Yeah, it's not that hard. So that piece of focusing on the solution is really, really important because the traditional methods really just suppress behavior. They Absolutely. Don't do a good job of teaching new behavior. So they're really good at no and stop, but they're not good at yes and go. Like, this is what I want you to do. This is the idea I'm hoping you'll do more of. And one risk in that is you can create a dog who's almost afraid to do anything. The Right. punishment does make us very, very fearful. Humans, dogs, anyone with a brain stem. Punishment has a negative suppressing behavior. It doesn't address the underlying issue that caused. Well, it's not even always an issue that causes the behavior. Like the jumping on grandma. From a dog's point of view, it's just happy hello. So for the dog to be saying happy hello and then everyone's angry, from a dog perspective, that's really a little alarming.
And confusing. So, and very confusing.
Yeah. All I was doing was welcoming her. What is your problem? So if we can try to show the dog, here's a behavior we like. Here's what we like. Then we're not changing the emotional state. In a bad way, because if right. I punish the dog every time grandma comes in,
we're going to hate grandma pretty
soon. We're going to hate grandma. Yeah. Seeing her is not going to be fun because it makes me get in trouble and it makes you really tense. So like we should just keep grandma out because
that's right. And that's the other thing. The problem with punishment based methods is that what exactly are you punishing?
Right.
Because one of the things that I have found is that especially when we're dealing with things like electric fences.
Yes.
The dog may, you think, okay, the dog has learned the boundary. I said, I'm not so sure that's what the dog's learned. Right. The dog sees, so you have your Labrador retriever and he now has his brand new shock collar on and he sees his buddy, the golden retriever, and he runs towards him and he gets bitten in the neck, which is what it feels like to him. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, oh, great, he's learned his boundary. I'm thinking, no, what he's learned is the approach of his buddy hurts.
Yeah.
And so what you may actually be teaching him is that the approach of other dogs is dangerous, and so we should tell them to back off.
Right. And so then we stand in the yard and bark, 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 bark. And
yeah,
then people go, well, we should zap that.
Yeah, that's right.
Zap him to stop barking. And then he goes, oh, no, that's worse. So right, we may eliminate the barking, but we're creating an anxiety, and that's a huge issue.
Right. And then if you are having him, you've suppressed a behavior, you've created mm-hmm. an anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. So then what's going to happen is, but you're not addressing the anxiety, you're not addressing the issue. It's going
not
to come out at some point because there's going to be a trigger that's going to be strong enough to elicit that old behavior. And this time it's not going to come out as a couple of woofs. It's going to come out as very aggressive behavior.
Right.
And so that's the other problem, I think, with punishment-based methods is that aggressive training tends to breed aggression, and that
yes.
If you don't address the underlying problem or you create an anxiety, it's going to come out. I remember a couple years ago, gosh, it was probably more than that. There was a little article, I think you sent it to me, about a beach ball.
Beach ball analogy. I love it.
Yeah. So if you think about it this way, if you try to hold a beach ball underwater, you can do it for just so long, but it's going to slip out of your hands and it's not going to just gently bob to the surface. Your dog's suppressed behavior is much like that beach ball. You can keep it under wraps for just so long, but at some point there's going to be a trigger. It's going to slip out and it's going to come rushing back out just like a beach ball comes flying back out of the water. And it's pretty much inevitable that that's going to happen. And then now what you're dealing with. So then what most people do is they deal with it with more force.
Right. And interestingly enough, punishment is reinforcing to the punisher.
Absolutely.
We feel better when we go, knock it off or whatever. That feels like we've done something. And yet it doesn't actually address any of the issues. But because it's reinforcing to the person who's doing it, I feel like I'm doing something, we tend to just escalate.
Yes.
We see that in our relationships with people, and we see it in our relationships with animals. And so this is where I think it really turns to a question of who do you want to be? I do see this as a very important value-based question. Like, I tell people all the time that I think dog training and parenting are very, very similar. My children know the rules, but they're not afraid of me. They don't really cross the rules very often. It's so rare that they do. But when they do, they're not terrified that they're going to be hurt or shunned or beaten or, you know, nothing horrible is going to happen to them. They're going to see their mother as disappointed and hurt. Yes. That's a good relationship. That is a safe relationship to grow and learn and explore. And that's what we want with our dogs. We don't want a dog who goes, oh no, you're home. Why would anyone want a dog for that purpose?
I have no idea. So, no, I agree. I was going to say, the other thing is what you're going to find is when you choose to focus on the positive and either redirect or ignore the negative behaviors and really reinforce those things you want your dog to do, you'll find this begins to affect other areas of your life.
Absolutely.
It affects the way in which you deal with everyone. Mm-hmm. And it tends up being that you end up being a much happier person, I think.
Yes, because I think so.
You are dealing with people in a much more positive way. And you're right. It does dovetail quite nicely with parenting. My sister is an occupational therapist who specializes in pediatric development. And she and I will talk, and she'll tell me about, she was telling me about one student. I said, well, okay, sweetheart, if that was my client, was a dog, there'd be three questions I would be asking. How much exercise is he getting? How much sleep is he getting? And what kind of food is he getting?
Yep.
And she said, those are the three questions I asked the mom, too. So there's a lot of different ways in which these things overlap that are basic needs that need to be met, whether you are human, canine, feline, whatever. There are basic needs that need to be met. And the more you can meet them in a positive way, the more you're going to build a dog or a person who is happy, confident, and trusting. And those are all things that we want for a functioning adult, either dog or child or person.
Yes. And I think people who use the traditional methods are using them because that's what they know and that's what they've been taught. So I'm not judging anyone who uses them. I just really think that there's better stuff out there. And I had a time in my life when I did not know there was better stuff. And I hope that all the dogs I interacted with in that time can forgive me for what I did not know.
Yes,
and
I feel very much the same way. And I feel like it's not so much we're judging them as we're challenging them. I'm challenging you to take a step back and see if there's something new to learn, to grow, to be, that might be better. And because certainly...
And more fun.
That's right.
So much more fun. That's the key. The American Veterinary Society of Animal Behaviorists, that does not roll off my tongue.
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
It's AVSAB, and I always mix up the letters and do it wrong. But the American Veterinary Society of Animal Behaviorists, I am pretty sure that is correct.
That is correct.
Has an interesting position statement on the adverse effects of punishment.
They do.
And so if you're interested in any more information about this, we can put that in the show notes, a link to that in the show notes. But really, it does come down to some of the points that we've just said, that it's difficult to time punishment effectively, to use it really correctly. It deteriorates relationships. It does not enhance the relationship. It can also accidentally strengthen the negative behavior. And it has these really rough situations in which it's suppressing a behavior, but can lead to that beach ball explosion thing where it's like hidden, whoops. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I think it's a really important piece for us to say, you want to have the most positive, happy relationship with your dog you possibly can. So if you go to a trainer who is setting you up in opposition to your dog, you know, thou shalt listen to me. That's not the goal. The goal is it should be fun, happy communication. So if you're not feeling like this is fun for you and fun for your dog, I really encourage you to find another trainer, because it should be.
It should be. Because they're companion animals. Mm-hmm. You need to understand that the reason they're called a companion animal is because they're supposed to provide companionship, and you don't breed companionship with somebody by hurting them.
Right.
And the other thing is an important thing to note is that in addition to the fact that punishment may increase the severity and frequency of bad behaviors, aggressive training techniques can also increase the chances for increased aggression directed at the owner.
Yes.
And so that's something to be – which brings us back to the point you were making about the small child, the 2.5-year-old spanking a dog, and that if you're doing this sort of aggressive training technique and it increases the chances of aggression directed back towards the one who's training it, what kind of a situation are you putting that child in? So it really yes. does become a matter of safety for both children and adults.
Yeah. So. And you know what? Dog bites are, we should all be avoiding them. You know, like even if you're saying, oh, he doesn't scare me, why would we put ourselves in a situation where we're creating a situation in which a dog is going to be like, do it again and I'm going to hurt you? Well, we can fix that. We can turn that around right. with different methods. So it's not even just a child method, but suppressive techniques. You know what? I see this occasionally with men too, where they'll say, well, he listens to me, but he doesn't always listen to my wife. And he doesn't listen to my kids. And I think, well, let's use a method that's safe for everybody, because we get a trickle-down theory. We Absolutely. Get the testing of where's the weak link? Where can I, you know, let behavior out? And that is so unsafe. And it's not what these men want for their family. They're not trying to create a dangerous situation. And yet they are sometimes creating a dangerous situation if they're using very scary force-based techniques. When they're not there, what's happening?
Right. And I think that's a really good point. A really good point. One of the other things I did want to mention, a couple of the positive aspects of positive reinforcement training that we haven't looked at. One of the things is that if you suppress behavior, you're going to suppress behavior overall. We've talked about
right.
that. And so it's really hard to teach a dog who's been trained with force-based methods to do tricks because they're scared yeah. to try anything. So mm-hmm. trick training becomes really fun and possible. It's also great for unfocused dogs. You can use a very quick reinforcement rate to get the dog to refocus towards you. So I was doing that this morning with a little miniature schnauzer. We were doing what we call my focused attention. He looks at me, I click, throw a treat. He looks at me, click, throw a treat. So it really got him to rapidly interact with me. It's easy and fun to train alternative behaviors for a problem, as we have mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if we're going to just reward for four on the floor, wow, what a great opportunity to provide a lot of good positive reinforcement for your dog. The other thing is one of the things that we really did touch on, and I think it's something I wanted to reiterate, it changes your view of the world and yeah. how you interact with everyone.
It does. It really does.
And it gives you, once again, makes you solution-oriented towards problems, not just with your dog, but with other things in life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you allow it to change you, it will for the positive. So
yes.
I think there's some really terrific things to that. Now, this is a topic, I think, Colleen, that we'll be coming back to.
No doubt.
On a fairly regular basis. This is sort of our first introduction as to why we're positive, but I'm sure that there'll be many opportunities for us to refer back to this topic and maybe even do another podcast at a later date with more specifics.
Yeah. And, you know, positive training really has a big groundswell of support at this point. So there are lots of great resources for people who are interested in learning more about it. And I'm delighted to see that. So it is a theme. We will keep bringing it up. But it's a good thing. It's a good thing for dogs. But you know what? It's really even a better thing for people.
Absolutely.
It is.
Okay. Well, I think it's time for our phone call now.
Yes, we got a phone call. We love getting phone calls. So if you have a question that you'd like us to talk about, give us a call at 614-349-1661 or visit yourfamilydogpodcast.com to send us your question. But let's listen to this question now.
My question is it true that you can't teach an old dog new tricks? I think my 7-year-old rescued chocolate lab must have missed out on some classes in puppy preschool because she has no interest in toys of any kind. I can't get her to retrieve a tennis ball. I can't even get her to put the tennis ball in her mouth. She doesn't want to play tug of war, no squeaky toys. So is it too late to learn how to play?
Okay, well, that was pretty good. I guess the essence of that question is, can you teach an old dog new tricks? What do you think, Colleen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But there is one little challenge here with this, in that play is a behavior that occurs in very young dogs when they feel safe and comfortable. So play tends to be something that we learn early and then keep through our lives. But if we don't learn it early, it can be a little harder. to Absolutely. Teach a 7-year-old dog how to play by our definition of play. So one thing that I would suggest is maybe we look specifically at what does your dog really like to do? And maybe expand the definition of play a little bit to fit some of those activities that your dog totally loves. Maybe that's belly rubs. Maybe that's sniffing in the yard. Maybe it's, you know, cuddling with you on the couch. And then add a few more active pieces that more fit our definition, like fetch or playing ball. What do you think?
I think that's a great suggestion. I think it's also important to remember that even dogs who had positive experiences with play as puppies at 7 years old are beginning to retire play. Mm-hmm. They're not playing nearly as much. Not all breeds play heavily through to the end. So that's something to remember too, that even a dog who has played is going to start tapering off at the age of 7. But one of the things is I also think you can do, which brings us right into our discussion of earlier, is that positive reinforcement plays a real terrific role here. If your dog shows any signs of play, do they like to run? Does he like to chase? Does he ever give a play bow? Any kind of sign that he might be showing some playful activity needs to be reinforced. Click and treat, or, you know, do it back. If he runs, you run. If he play bows, you stop and give a little play bow. See if you can encourage him at any kind of playful attempts to reinforce that. And if you really, really, and I do like the idea of broadening the definition of play. So maybe your dog really likes to be out for a walk. So maybe what you could do in part of the walk is, you know, bring a ball and roll the ball in front of you as you go for a walk as a way to encourage him to play.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, today I have a dog who is not good at play. He was adopted at 2 or 3 years old, and he just doesn't really get it. I mean, honestly, he's confused by some of this. So sometimes I do things that I consider play, and he considers trick training. So just before we started recording this podcast, I put a stress squeeze ball on the floor, and I was clicking and treating him for using his nose and nudging it around. The cat thought we were crazy. But from my perspective, my dog is playing with this ball. From his perspective, he's being trained to nudge a ball with his nose. I'm not sure he thought it was so much play as, isn't this a fun learning game? Because he does lots of fun learning games with me.
Mm-hmm.
But it became an object-oriented game. If I put that ball on the floor and I'm not clicking and treating, he will walk right past it. He doesn't see it as a toy. If I do a lot of this clicking and training about this particular ball, he will eventually see it as a toy.
So that's the other thing, is that if it's really important to you, if your definition of play is absolutely, I want to play fetch with my Labrador Retriever, then I suggest that you can do one of two things. If you want to play fetch with a dog, borrow a dog that plays fetch with a friend, from a friend. Okay? You can play fetch with that dog. But that also might encourage your dog to run with that dog and begin to get the idea of interacting with you in a more active way. So it could help, not that the other dog will teach him how to play fetch, but it might get your dog to be more active running back and forth and get the idea. And the other thing is get yourself a positive reinforcement trainer in your area who can work to help work with you to teach your dog how to play fetch, because it's not really just a 1-2-3 process. It's something at this point you're going to need some help with.
Yeah, there are definitely a couple of different pieces, and your dog might be stuck on only one of them or maybe need help with a few of them. But a trainer can help you figure that out and also just teach you fun ways to play with your dog, regardless of what it is. But old dogs absolutely positively can learn new tricks, just like we can. You know, we all can learn new things. However, our habits come into play. So the longer you've been doing A, it can be a little harder to do B, but that doesn't mean we can't learn to do it. We all can keep learning throughout our whole lives and should keep learning throughout our whole lives.
Absolutely. It's never too late to train your dog, and it's never too late to train yourself.
So. Indeed. That's probably a good place to wrap this one up. What do you think, Julie?
I think that is. Thanks, Colleen. We'll see you next time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.